Linda Arvidsson Griffith acted in early silent films, and she writes, "My memories of working outdoors that first summer are not so pleasant. We thought we were going to get cool, fresh air in the country, but the muggy atmosphere that hung over the Hudson on humid August days didn't thrill us much. I could have survived the day better in the studio with the breeze from our one electric fan." Mr. Griffith got badly annoyed when discomforts prevailed. In winter, for instance, our makeup would be frozen, and the dreary, cold, damp rooms in the country hotels made us shivery and miserable. We'd hurriedly climb into our costumes, drag on our coats, and then light our little alcohol stove or candle to get the makeup sufficiently smeary. When made up, out into the cold, crisp day. One of the men would have a campfire going where we'd huddle between scenes and keep limber enough to act. Then, when ready for the scene, Billy Bitzer would have to light the little lamp that he attached to the camera on cold days to warm the film so it wouldn't be streaked with lightning. While that was going on, we stood at attention, ready to do our bit when the film was. We weren't so keen on playing leads on such days as those, for when you are half frozen, it isn't easy to look as if you were calmly dying of joy, for which emotional state the script might be asking. What we liked best in the winter was to follow Max Sennett in the chases which he always led, and which he made so much of later when he became the big man in Keystone films. The chase warmed us up, for Max Sennett led us on some merry jaunts over stone walls, down gullies, atop of fences, whatever looked good and hard to do. He was one of our regular extra people, quietly dubbed along like the rest, only he grouched. He never approved wholeheartedly of anything we did, nor how we did it, nor who did it. When work was over, Max Sennett would hang around the studio, watching for the opportune moment when his director would leave. Mr. Griffith, D.W. Griffith, often walked home, wanting to get a bit of fresh air. This Sennett had discovered. So in front of the studio, or at the corner of Broadway and 14th Street, he'd pull off the accidental meeting, accidental in quotes. Then for 23 blocks he would have the boss all to himself and wholly at his mercy. 23 blocks of uninterrupted conversation. "Well now, what do you really think about these moving pictures? What do you think there is in them? Do you think they're going to last? What's in them for the actor? What do you think of my chances?" To all of which Mr. Griffith would reply, "Well, not much for the actor, if you're thinking of staying. The only thing is to become a director. I can't see that there's anything much for the actor as far as the future is concerned." Words of D.W. Griffith quoted in When the Movies Were Young by Linda Arvidsson Griffiths, and that essay in Fort Lee, The Film Town by Richard Kozarski. As we know, Max Sennett did go on to become a director, and we're invited to revel in the results this weekend as the Binghamton Theatre Organ Society presents a series of Sennett classics with live accompaniment by Jim Ford. WVIA's Peter Wynn sat down with Jim Ford to learn more.
Jim, you have a very, very interesting program coming up. You're calling it a Max Sennett mini film fest. Just who was Max Sennett, and why should we care about him?
Max Sennett was referred to in his day. He was dubbed the King of Comedy in the 1920s. He was from Canada and came to the U.S. and was involved with making motion pictures starting in, 1912. He and two bookies turned producers, Adam Kessel and Charles Bauman, formed the Keystone Film Company. And, of course, when you hear the word Keystone, what do you think of? Keystone Cops. And they were, of course, featured in many of Max Sennett's films. He was a director as well as producer and occasionally even actor, although I read that some of the other actors in the films tried to discourage him from doing that. They didn't think he was very good at acting, but he certainly knew how to make people laugh.
An interesting variety of films, too. I mean, you have Gloria Swanson and Wallace Beery in one film, and Ben Turpin, of course, and Harry Langdon. And I suspect that Gloria Swanson and Wallace Beery aside, many people today might not know who Ben Turpin and Harry Langdon might have been.
Well, so many people have heard of Gloria Swanson, and in the movie Teddy at the Throttle, she's only about 17 or 18 years old. So it would be 33 years later when she's in Sunset Boulevard and says that famous line, "All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up."
And heaven knows she is pretty when she was 17. She absolutely lovely, lovely face. But, you know, one of the things I found interesting in seeing Teddy at the Throttle is that you can see that the Victorian melodrama is not very far out of sight. I mean, that character, Wallace Beery, he doesn't twirl his mustache, but everything short of it.
Yes, that's quite true.
But one thing I did find interesting in this lineup is that obviously you have opportunity for lots and lots of different musical approaches. I mean, you've got one of the films, Broken China. You have a Chinese setting. His Marriage Vow is a small city, maybe. And Down on the Farm, you can have all different kinds of music. What have you in mind when you approach each of these films?
The theater pipe organ has such a wealth of different sounds that you can produce, and you certainly want to make use of them when you're accompanying a silent film. We have one stop, one rank of the organ called the canura, and it has been described quite correctly as a tuned buzz. So you can have some interesting comedy effects using that particular stop. And, of course, the organ has an actual bass drum, snare drum, and you can make use of those. The bass drum especially I like to use. If someone falls, we have what's called second touch on the pedal. On the 32 pedals, if you press with extra force, you can hear, boom, a bass drum. And there's a bass drum up in one of the chambers, the percussion chamber. So you want to make use of a lot of these different wonderful sounds. And there's an actual siren that you press on a little toe stud, and you can hear a siren or auto horn and so on. And especially in His Marriage Vow, there's a chase scene, and it'll be a lot of fun. In fact, we have specifically planned these comedies and for the show on December the 30th, which is a Sunday, the Sunday between Christmas and New Year's, because, well, maybe there isn't quite as much going on at that time, although there's always something going on. But at that particular point, most people, after the holidays or after Christmas is over, they feel as if they're get up and go, got up and left, you know? So we're going to have them come in and just sit there and have a wonderful time. And the movies are on Blu-ray, very clear, very crisp, and people will have a lot of fun, and that's what we're all about.
Now, one of the things I found intriguing was this Teddy, of course, is a dog, and he must be one of the earliest iterations of Rin Tin Tin and Lassie and all this kind of stuff, the heroic dog.
Yes, I thought of Lassie or Rin Tin Tin when I was watching the film the very first time, and this is a very talented dog. And very intelligent. People will enjoy any animal lover, and who doesn't love animals, will be amazed at what this dog can do.
And then, of course, the Wallace Beery character chains the Gloria Swanson character to the railroad tracks. I mean, this is straight out of a Victorian melodrama. It's really fun. I absolutely love it. Now, what about Broken China? That's an interesting appearance for Ben Turpin. And here you have as exotic a setting as you could ask for.
Yes. The costume, some of the characters in that film just immediately crack you up as soon as you see them on screen. Ben Turpin, of course, is the one who has one eye kind of moving to the left or right, and he's funny before he does anything. And some of the ladies, especially in one of the early scenes, the way they're dressed, they're very funny. You can't help but laugh.
Of course, his comedy is very, very physical, slapstick, and a lot of pratfalls and pie in the face kind of stuff. Does there any pies in the face in Broken China?
I don't recall. I will be looking at the movies, all of them, very, very carefully between now and December 30th. But I don't recall if there are any pies in the face. But there's certainly a lot of slapstick, no doubt about that.
Well, it seems to me he's reputed to have taken the first pie in the face on film, so.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But the other film you have on that first half, His Marriage, wow, with Harry Langdon, you couldn't get a stronger contrast in the kind of comedy that these two men played. I mean, one guy is strictly, you know, pie in the face, and the other guy is rather winsome, rather call to mind Charlie Chaplin's Little Tramp in certain ways.
Yes, that's quite true. And that is, by the way, the correct title of this particular movie, His Marriage Wow, wow. Not His Marriage Vow, but Wow, where I think you can say Murphy's Law applies. So it's hilarious. It really is.
I know for some of the bigger movies, occasionally the producers actually provided a score or something for you to begin your point of departure. Is anything like that available for Max Sennett? Have you ever seen one of these old movie scores?
To be honest with you, I never have. I have always done my own right on the spur of the moment accompanying and improvising based on what I see happening on the screen, whatever is called for, fast, slow, emotion, romance, mm-hmm. whatever. You just try to come up with music for the moment to evoke a particular mood at a particular time.
I often wondered if you ever tried to build in, you know, references to some of the popular music of the period. That was a good period for songwriters, 1914, you know, just around the years of the First World War.
Yes, if it is popular music of that very era, I will occasionally make use of it, yes. But you won't hear anything modern.
No, but I was thinking there's an awful lot of pretty songs in those years around World War I that I could imagine you're mining for little nuggets to add to your musical accompaniment. Then the entire second half is devoted to a single film, this Down on the Farm. Why did you want to go with this particular film?
Because it's 52 minutes long, and that makes for a perfect second half. And yes, people will have had a 15-minute intermission. They're relaxed, and now they can just sit down and enjoy one film from beginning to end that will conclude the program after 52 minutes.
You have 67 minutes or something like that for the first half, and second halves usually are a little lighter. I could not get to see. I saw some excerpts from Down on the Farm, and I found it is rather confusing. Have you seen it recently?
Not recently. I looked at it once and will look at it many more times. But it was really quite a very famous film at that time when it came out. In its day, yes. It was very highly rated.
How much time do you spend preparing for a program like this? If you're watching all the films repeatedly, and then do you ever noodle along on a piano at home or something like that?
No, it's all pretty much spontaneous once I get into the theater. I go in, usually it's the day before, and set pistons so that I can instantly change the sound of the organ the way I want it to sound. But, of course, I spend time at home watching the movies, the DVDs, to find out exactly what I'm going to do. But the music is all instantaneous at the time that I see it when everyone else is seeing it.
Now, this organ that you're playing is really quite a wonderful instrument. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I can say I'm very fortunate to have been one of those individuals here in Binghamton who was with this organ project right from the start. We had two individuals who headed up this project, and both of them geniuses in their own right. George Melnick, a now retired IBM engineer, Albert Imola, who had his own organ business, pipe organ business, and I had worked for him. We worked on several organs in the area. And as far as my involvement was concerned, I listened to their directions, but they did give me the opportunity to have some input as far as the specifications of the instrument are concerned. And one such feature that I'm very proud of is the second touch on the pedals. Bass drum, snare drum, and a crash cymbal. Crash cymbal is also very useful if someone falls.
In comedy,
yes.
How many stops do you think you'll use during the course of this program?
I won't be able to give you an exact number, but many, many of the stops of the organ. It has a total of 24 ranks, which makes it quite a large organ. We have four manuals. Of course, that means four keyboards, plus the 32-pedal pedal board. And it's designed for the organist to be able to really simulate the sound of an entire orchestra. That's really how the theater pipe organ came into existence, when there was suddenly this new way of entertaining people called movies, silent, although they were silent, of course, at first, but there was a great demand for either someone to play the piano, or in larger theaters, larger towns, you had pipe organs that were put in to really make it, for economic reasons, you paid the one person, the organist, to play. and produce all of these various orchestral sounds.
Well, I can imagine for most people, the organs that they're familiar with really are church organs, and this is really quite a bit more spectacular, shall we say.
It is different from church organs. We have a console. Well, there was an Englishman by the name of Robert Hope Jones, who actually had an organ building factory in Elmira. And he came up with this idea of using switches and electric wires that would allow the organist to be at a console with the pipes perhaps 70, 75 feet above on either side of the front of the theater. You might say it was like early stereophonic sound, because we have a main chamber and we have a solo chamber, and they're on opposite sides of the auditorium.
Pretty fascinating.
Great piece of Americana.
Almost limited to the United States?
No, they are in other countries as well. I think it's been said that there are only about 300 of these theater pipe organs that can be heard by the public in public places. I know of some that are home installations. Some people in the American Theater Organ Society, for example, wanted to save a pipe organ, a theater pipe organ, when the theater was going to be demolished, and actually put them in their homes or had a home built around them.
Now, in February, you're going to be doing what is probably one of the most famous single silent films of all, The Sheik with Rudolph Valentino.
Yes, absolutely we are. We are looking forward to that on Sunday, February the 10th, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, once again at the Forum Theater in Binghamton. I will be accompanying The Sheik, and certainly Rudolph Valentino was one of the number one stars of his day, and you remember that funeral, I think it was 1926 when he died, quite young, but he was the, you can just about name any famous male actor today, and he was the equivalent of that person.
Tell me you're not going to play The Sheik of Araby somewhere in the course of that.
I will come up with music that will evoke the mood. I'll play something as if I were writing it, something like that.
Organist Jim Ford speaking with WVIA's Peter Wynn about the Mack Sennett Mini Film Festival hosted by the Binghamton Theater Organ Society at the Forum Theater. That's this Sunday, December 30th at 2 p.m. And the address, 226 Washington Street in Binghamton. For more information on the web, binghamtontos.com, binghamtontos.com. That's a Mack Sennett Mini Film Festival presented by the Binghamton Theater Organ Society at the Forum Theater, 226 Washington Street in Binghamton, Sunday, December 30th at 2 p.m. For more information on the web, binghamtontos.com.